You know what keeps most people up at night?
It's not politics.
It's money. Dave Ramsey helps you take control of it, one decision at a time. Real callers, real situations, and straight talk about getting out of debt, building wealth, and finally telling your money where to go.
Where to go.
Instead of wondering where it went.
Where it went.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Is the facility, and this is not a league. You know, it's a prestigious league. This is not a league that's going to play somewhere. They're not going to play at Brosnahan or at Wahoo Stadium for 5 or 6 years waiting on an arena stadium and putting the shoe on the other foot. I understand that.
Yeah, the mayor on Tuesday in his press conference talking about the prospect of having the United Soccer League come to Pensacola, which we are now about a year into this, I think. Maybe it's a little bit less than that. I forget when exactly we entered this. But, you know, they have an exclusivity agreement with us to kind of explore it. It's sort of a pre-sale agreement or, you know, agreement that, you know, we wouldn't pursue soccer with anybody else and that they would explore Pensacola to see if it's going to work out. But as he mentioned, the big question about whether that is or is not going to happen, they want to do it. They want to do it here in Pensacola. We are the kind of ideal city for them. But you got to find a place. And if you can't find a place, then it's all moot. And no, they're not going to do a temporary facility at, you know, Ashton Brosnahan or at Wahoo's or at, you know, I don't know what, Hitzman Park. You know, they're not. It's a professional soccer league. I mean, it's a big deal. It's not maybe, you know, I don't know, soccer like you'd see in Europe, but, you know, it's a pretty big deal. And I've seen some of the soccer stadiums around the country, and, you know, you got to build a thing. It's not going to be just some temporary thing while they build. The whole point is to have it all put together at one time so that it can be a first-class production.
The idea is to build excitement around this, you know, some type of downtown core stadium, not to kind of hope it happens one day and play 8 or 10 years at a temporary facility. I don't think that is what the league would want to do. Nor is it really, frankly, what I think would be the highest and best if it were to take place. So that's the big, is, you know, where does the stadium go and how is the stadium funded?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. We check a lot of boxes for them, but you got to find a place to put that event at.
But I think all the other boxes are checked in terms of the market, in terms of there being viability of local ownership, some of those other things. I seem to feel, you know, at least from what they say and what I've heard in our kind of standing meetings is, you know, everybody's pretty bullish on all of those aspects, but it just comes down to the big elephant in the room, which is, you know, a multi-million dollar stadium or facility and where it would go that fits their model of something that would be relatively close to the downtown core.
And I know if you're thinking about downtown, you're thinking about big open spaces that might work for this. I suspect there is actually room at Community Maritime Park at the south end that could theoretically work for it. But the one that most people would think of right away, I mean, Old Stinky's gone because that's being developed, right? That's, you know, got homes on it right now. But you have the Tech Park. And you might be thinking, well, but the Tech Park has clawback money if we don't use it for technology. That's true. The Tech Park is being discussed in conjunction with the Bay Center redesign, renovation, rebuild, upgrade, whatever you want to call it. You know, pick your synonym as, you know, a place for parking. Probably not. But, you know, as a hotel, as a, you know, what's going to happen at the Tech Park? Nobody, you know, West Florida Economic Development Alliance has been involved in doing, you know, better work of getting that site ready to actually be economic development. But the mayor says, no, you misunderstand. The Tech Park is not available for a completely different reason.
I think there was a water cooler talk, I think, somewhere around town that we were talking about wanting to put a soccer stadium at the Tech Park, which has never been considered, frankly, because you can't even put, you would have to have the field go east and west, which is not, you don't want somebody playing into the sun or a goalie trying to stop the ball in the sun. So that's not ideal as it is. So there really isn't there's to prove that point, there is no part of the tech park nor the parking lot that would be suitable enough to be able to fit something like that.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, the basic issue with the tech park is that, you know, if you're thinking, hey, that's a perfect rectangle, it's ready to go. No, because you don't want the goalies at either end of the net, you know, looking at the sun. You want to set out your soccer field to be a north-south orientation. I guess I don't feel myself to be any kind of expert on this, but what he said makes perfect sense. You know, you got to think about sunlight when you're building these parks. So they're still looking. They're still thinking about it. I had wondered if maybe Ashton Brosnahan, but if the 9 Mile John Jones facility, if that might not be an appropriate one, even though, of course, the county is involved in their $25 million resurfacing of that, something I have opposed the whole step of the way, every step of the way. But I wondered if that might not fit. The problem I think there is it's too far from downtown. They want to be downtown. They want to be immersed in it. And so you start to limit your options when you think about, you know, big empty spaces available downtown. But we'll see. You know, it's really up to them to see if they can find a place that might work. And, you know, at this point, I'd say it's still kind of a maybe and a hope and a possibility instead of a, you know, until we have that problem solved of where to put it, it's not a thing yet. Bay Center, remember several weeks ago, you know, we talked a little bit about this, that the Bay Center is apparently, maybe it was last week, maybe it was 2 weeks, I don't know. Anyway, that the Bay Center, you know, it's long been the conversation around the Bay Center redesign, upgrade, whatever the synonyms again, that, well, the county owns the Bay Center, and then how does the county work with the city in studying the question, in thinking about what happens around that facility, if we get a, you know, basically a hotel, if we get ice, if we get, you know, a convention space, which is the primary thing that they want to do, if we get an athletic complex, which is also the thing, you know, like all of these things are in flux. And there's been a plan put forward, and, you know, everybody wants it until they see the price tag. And it's like, oh, I really want that dress, $5,000. I don't want that dress so much anymore. You know, that's kind of the problem with the Bay Center changes. You know, there's going to be money put into renovating the thing itself as a music venue and also the Ice Flyers. Anyway, so long conversation here has always been predicated on the idea that the county and the Board of County Commissioners, therefore, have the primary say over the Bay Center because it's their house. They own it. Well, turns out that's true, but like many property questions in this area, who owns the house is not the same as who owns the land. And turns out the city owns the land, and the county is kind of a leasee. They are kind of in an agreement to build on and operate the land. So who controls the Bay Center? Well, according to the mayor and according to, you know, Adam Cobb, the lawyer, well, we have a say. The city has a say in what the county does here. And so it's no longer the county can do whatever it wants, and if the city wants to have an input, that's fine. But really, you guys don't really get to say too much. Now it sounds more like, well, you know, the city is kind of justified in having an input. And obviously, whoever makes a decision is also going to be involved in the funding. It's not really fair to say we get to decide how it gets used and not put any of the money involved in it. Of course, the city has, I'm sure, particular opinions about what happens on that facility and how it gets developed. And now you have the, you know, two-headed monster of the county and the city trying to do a project together and both having input, which would be great if they always saw eye to eye. And of course, they do not always see eye to eye. Anyway, John Singley of Studio 850 asked the mayor about this on Tuesday.
Mayor, one final question on Bay Center future. This whole issue of ownership, do you think that'll factor into the discussions? Do you think that gives the city leverage?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think...
I don't know if you could hear it, but, you know, does the issue of ownership give the city leverage as a factor into the discussions about what happens at the Bay Center?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's pretty clear, in, you know, in the agreement. I don't think that the county or the city would be doing its job if where we're starting the conversation is who has the high ground. And, you know, it's too important for our community and it's too important for our region to get this right and to work together.
So he gives kind of a mixed answer here. It's a both yes, but kind of answer. On the one hand, well, clearly, if we have contractual interests or rights involved in this discussion, well, that's not nothing. But it would be wrong to look at it as who has the power. He calls it the high ground, but, you know, who really has the power to make the decision? That's not the right. We should be looking at this as something that we're going to collaborate on, cooperate on. But it does bring the city to the table in a different way if they have legal rights. And so I don't think the mayor is eager in getting into a, you know, a fight over who controls this. There have been issues in the past with the city and the county not agreeing about, you know, who has what power, who's putting in what money. Think about Baptist and, you know, that the county had promised to put in money. And then in the end, they basically said, we unpromise it and okay, we move ahead. But of course, the response from the mayor, you know, appropriately so, is, well, if you're not putting any money in, then you're not, you know, you don't have any say in what happens here. You know, you can have input, but, you know, money is talking or not. They certainly don't have any ownership interest in it, no legal. But if they had put money in, then they maybe say they would. So it's another place where we'll see whether the city and the county can really get along in figuring all of this out. But the ownership of the land does seem to change at least the legal authority on the question of what happens at that that location.
So if this is the forcing function,
think about this. If I own a piece of land and I allow somebody to lease it from me, you know, like say Pensacola Beach, you know, and then you build a house out there or a business, and then you say, yeah, I want to build a second house on that land. Well, theoretically, I would have some powers, or they'd be specified in the lease, right? That's if you want to think of an analogy.
So if this is the forcing function that that makes sure that we're all working together, then great. That was my intent no matter what. And certainly I would hope that that would be the county's intent no matter what. You know, that approaching it any other way or saying, well, you know, the county's got to come report to us and what we're I don't want to get into any of that.
That's not the goal. But he does use the phrase, you know, forcing equation, as in if this does give us a, you know, make sure we're inside the room in the discussions. Well, it does give us that. But let's, you know, let's try to get along over this. So this is kind of just interesting. We'll see how this plays out, again, with a very expensive project, which everybody wants the result of and nobody's real excited to pay for. And the particulars here, which depend on things like parking and getting a hotel built on the site from a private investor, that's not something that we're going to fund the build of, and the Grand Hotel and, you know, the study that the part of the reason this came up, by the way, is because the city had sent out surveys to residents in the area asking them, you know, for their input on this project. And then that deadline was extended and that raised the question, well, why is the city doing the survey in the first place? You're just kind of a curious. Well, no, we own it. Wait, what? So that's a little bit of the context here. 521 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Today at the Board of County Commission meeting in Escambia County, you're going to have a conversation not to set the answer to the question, but to set a public hearing to discuss the question of having the elected versus appointed superintendent for schools back on the ballot this year. Remember, the school board had voted not once but twice to do it and to do it at the primary instead of the general election. That's where the controversy is. I mean, you have controversy over whether to do it at all, because some people like having it appointed. Some people would prefer to return to having an elected. Three school board members want an elected, and they want to do it at the primary. That's the big fight. Certainly, the school board has the authority to say we can do it, you know, at all. But the Board of County Commissioners are, you know, the question is going to be, do they have the power to set the date over the desires of the school board, as in to move it from the primary to the general election? Or does the, you know, are they just kind of a magisterial function? They just, you know, pencil whip it because the school board asked for it. This is going to be the nature of the conversation. Not today, again, because they're just setting the public hearing today. But April 1st, I think, is the scheduled date for this. And this is going to be a really interesting conversation because basically you have two questions. Question number one, should you have it on the ballot at all? Which is the question of should we so quickly after having gone to an appointed, should we go back to an elected? But you're allowed to go back and change it. The second question is whether you put it in the primary when everybody will be eligible to vote in the primary, including Democrats who do not have a lot of district candidates because District 3 is the Democrats, Districts 1, 2, 4, and 5 are the Republicans. And this year you have, you know, District 3 is not up for re-election. It's District 2 and District 4. And so the kind of the thinking on this is that if you put this on the ballot, everybody can vote on it, but it'd be the only thing on the Democrats' ballot. There's nothing else for them to vote on in any, I mean, basically. So they would have to go out of their way to show up on election day to vote in places where they don't even have anything. It's like this is the one thing. Whereas Republicans, who are going to be voting for primaries, are, you know, in lots of ways. I mean, we might, you know, we're going to have primaries for districts 2, district 1, maybe have a primary for the state representative. You might have one for district 3. You're going to have ones for Congress. Like, there's going to be a lot of primaries for Republicans who have an interest. They're already going to be voting on primary day. Democrats, not so much. So if you want to get the input from the maximum number of voters, you do it at the general election, because this is a general question for all the voters. You have, because then you have, you know, voting for Congress, voting for state rep, voting for all kinds of things. In the primary, it's almost only going to be Republicans, even though Democrats would be allowed. So the theory is that if you do it at primary time, Republicans are more interested in having an elected. Therefore, it's more likely to go back to being elected. And it's a political game to try to get it at the primary, to reduce the number of voters, to reduce them to a group that are more likely to pass it. I consider that an illegitimate, unethical scheme. I think this should be at the general election. But I don't get a vote on the school board. They voted 3-2 to put it at the primary, which I think was a terrible mistake. It's a really misguided effort to create an outcome you want politically by trying to reduce the number of voters who participate in making the decision. So that's going to be part of the conversation that the county commission is going to have. And in the past, at least some of the county commissioners have said, no, we should do it at the general. And some others have said it's not our choice to make. The school board told us what they want. So, again, that's just kind of a preview of what's happening today and a little bit later on in the month. In next month. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. And if you are thinking about getting a roof on your home, I mean, probably you're not thinking about it just out of sheer joy of buying. Nobody gets up in the morning like, you know what I want today? I would like to get a stake and a new roof. Like, it's nothing that anybody is eager for. But if you have problems with your current roof, of course, you're eager to solve those problems. The cost of a new roof is quite high. If you're going to sell the house, you might be that your roof is too old to sell that house. And insurance may be telling you it's too old to sell. Anyway, the point is, nobody really wants to buy a new roof. Of course, you want the results of having one. Well, Brian Ward founded Quality Roofing Solutions 20 years ago, 2006. They've put in 10,000 roofs since then. They're very high reviews on Google, 4.9. I have a dear friend who just got a roof put in from them, and she said, hey, they weren't necessarily the cheapest price out there. They certainly weren't the most expensive, but they did good work, and I had a good experience in the process of it. They have done all kinds of things over the years to try to improve the way they deliver service, like, you know, they have a warehouse here for supplies so that if we ever have a storm, like after Sally, this is what they did. Hey, we need to have supplies so that we can get to business right away. They do these runaround vans that deliver things from the warehouse to the job site, and you scan in and out with, you know, barcode scanners so that they know exactly what equipment was used, so that your people don't have to go back and forth to the warehouse, but also you get things delivered quite. It's just, they do a lot of little things, including customer service and talking to people and, you know, treating you like a person. Lifetime warranty on the workmanship for all of their roofs, which is unheard of. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
One in four tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
One in four was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
There's no championship league for small business owners, but if there was, you'd be at the top of the standings. Because going pro with Lenovo Pro means you've got the winning formation, one-on-one advice, IT solutions, and customized hardware powered by Intel Core Ultra processors help you stay ahead of the competition. Business goes pro with Lenovo Pro. Sign up for free at lenovo.com/pro.
Lenovo, Lenovo.
You're not looking for an argument.
You just want to know what's going on.
And that's a good thing.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Danger Powers Personal Effects.
Actually, my name is Austin Powers.
It says your name, Danger Powers.
No. Danger's my middle name.
Good morning, 529 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We learned, and we'd kind of seen this a couple of days ago, that there were going to be a couple of cancellations early on in the Blue Angels show season. You know, the Blue Angels Air Show Information Facebook page, which is genuinely a fantastic resource. They're the ones who are always telling you, hey, you know, Fat Albert, check Radio Mike at 520 over Pensacola. You know, like when they're doing the, you know, the fly over the beach and all that kind of stuff. They're very, very good at the information. And they had said that they were going to, first of all, stop reporting positions and times of the Blue Angels movements because we're at war and or we're at military action. I don't, you know, technically Congress is the only one to declare war, but the president called it a war. I mean, it's a war, okay? If it's, you know, it's not authorized by Congress yet, but it's still a war. Anyway, that they were not going to be reporting movements to the Blue Angels, that's appropriate and right. But now we have the official word that both of the locations where the first two shows were going to be have at NAS Lemoore and NAFL Centro, Naval Air Station versus Naval Air Facility, have canceled. And that is because of base access issues under the current threat environment that, you know, these are shows that primarily, like our homecoming show, depend on people being able to go on the base, and they're not doing that. Would they have the air show if it were, like, at the beach? Unknown. I mean, I don't know for a fact whether they would, but the first two, El Lemoore and El Centro, have been canceled because of that. So we'll see what happens to other performances and, of course, their practice schedules, well, as we go.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The war between the U.S. and Israel against Iran features a dogfight.
An Israeli F-35 shooting down an Iranian plane over the skies just outside of Tehran. This is the first war kill in the air for the Israelis since 1980.
Fox's Trey Yinks in Tel Aviv. The U.S. military pounding areas of Iran while the Israelis are striking parts of Lebanon.
We continue to strike Hezbollah systematically and to hunt down its operatives throughout the country.
That's IDF spokesperson Brigadier General Effie Defrin through an interpreter. House Democrats outraged about President Trump's use of the military in Iran will vote on his power to wage war without congressional approval first. That move failed in the Senate, basically along party lines on Wednesday. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 65 degrees. Our full forecast with Brooke Richardson is on the way here in just a few minutes. The man who breached Naval Air Station Pensacola on Monday, still on the loose. The Escambia Sheriff's Office identified the suspect as 38-year-old Joseph Edward Valinsky. Authorities say Valinsky beached a boat on the installation, ran ashore before evading a search of the base. Deputies later spotted him on Gulf Beach Highway, but he fled again before he could be taken into custody. The sheriff told News Radio Valinsky was homeless and was already wanted on unrelated fleeing and burglary charges. The sheriff also said Valinsky did not appear to be a terrorist threat. Escambia County veterans can get some help with their benefits today in Molino. The Veterans Services Office is hosting an outreach event in the Molino Community Center on Highway 95A North. That'll start at 9 o'clock this morning, go until later this afternoon. If you need help, no appointment is needed. Veterans can walk in and get help filing VA claims, reviewing benefits, and reevaluating disability ratings. Representatives from Legal Services of North Florida, the United Way, and several other agencies will also be on hand. Well, Florida's general revenue collections came in just a bit under expectations last month. The state collected $4.26 billion in January. That's about $19 million short of projections. State economists say the difference is within the normal range. Sales tax and corporate income tax collections both came in slightly below forecast. Real estate documentary stamp taxes were a bright spot, coming in $33 million over projections. The monthly figures are used by lawmakers to guide budget decisions for education, health, and prison programs. Citizens Property Insurance now carries about 500,000 policies statewide. That's down from 1.4 million in 2023. The drop comes as more private insurance companies have been re-entering the Florida market. Board Chair Carlos Baruff says their goal is to keep Citizens from ballooning up again.
If we can maintain our size and not grow back to a huge company again, we struggled to buy so much
reinsurance. It cost us so much money in prior years.
Keep the market healthy and we won't grow.
And Bariff says that with fewer policies, Citizens now has enough money on hand. Has enough money on hand to cover possible maximum loss and still maintain a surplus. Since 2023, 14 private insurance companies have returned to the state, giving homeowners more private insurance options. Well, a 17-year-old is in the hospital with serious injuries after his truck overturned off of a bridge in Cantonment on Monday. The Florida Highway Patrol says the teen lost control of his truck on East Kingsfield near County Road 297A. Escambia Fire Rescue and EMS responded to the scene. A medical helicopter took that teen to the hospital. It is 5:35. Let's get a check on our forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be seeing partly sunny skies today with a high near 75 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 66 degrees. Heading into Friday, partly sunny skies, 20% chance of a stray shower, high near 75. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 65 degrees. Going into Saturday, partly cloudy skies, high near 76. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 66 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And we've got right now 65 degrees. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Is your house your dream home? Or at least is it on the way there? Maybe it's time for a change. Maybe all you really need to turn your house into your dream home is an appliance upgrade. When it's time for an upgrade, then it's time to visit Topps Appliance in Milton. They're locally owned and operated. They have top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, and stoves to dependable washers and dryers. Topps Appliance carries the brands you know and trust, like GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and more. Topps Appliance in Milton. They offer delivery and installation, something you won't get from the big box stores. And they have many items in stock, so you can take your new appliance the very same day. Topps Appliance. Check them out at toppsappliance.net on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street. Turning your house into your dream home. Topps Appliance.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
It's that time of year when Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors visits the Pensacola Expert Panel, helping our listeners guide their investments. In times like these, it can be scary. If you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances, Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors will put you on the right path for success. Tune in this Monday at 9 and Tuesday at 10 as Armada Advisors helps you successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement.
You don't need someone yelling at you.
You just want someone to say what you're already thinking.
That's MVR. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins. They take the biggest stories of the day, cut through the nonsense, and say their quiet part out loud.
The American people have had enough.
Well, except for white women 55 plus.
There are a lot of white women that lean left.
Usually with a little sarcasm.
Thankfully, we know all the sane ones.
MVR. Weekdays 11 till 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Informative. Local. Dependable.
Morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone as he is in, I think, Fort Walton Beach this morning, Mayor D.C. Reese, Mayor of Pensacola. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, why are you over there?
Heading over to FPL Symposium.
All right, gotcha.
Early drive over in traffic.
Well, I have been teasing and promoting to people that we were going to make a big announcement this morning, and I want to start with it because of all the things you do in your mayoralty, and so many different things happening, I think this is the best, biggest, most people are going to find this fascinating announcement, and I'm going to let you say it. So tell them what next week's city council, what is the big reveal? What's happening?
We are voting on taking some of the FDOT right-of-way south of the Griffey Bridge so we can put a laser warning system in to take on the most formidable boss this community has ever seen, which is the Griffey Bridge, undefeated, and see if we can have it have a few less collisions as we've seen over the generations.
So it's not immediate, but next week, assuming city council goes along, and I cannot imagine why they would not, this will establish a memorandum of understanding with FDOT, because the big issue with all of this has been who owns which piece of land, who's going to allow which things to go in, and then getting all of that navigated. But if it all works out, which it doesn't seem like at this point there's any reason it wouldn't, when will construction start?
We should start the summer, and it's a few different things that we've been waiting on to, so we could do it all at once from a cost savings standpoint for the taxpayer, but we'll be putting the warning system in on both sides. The parking lot that is much needed TLC for the parking lot of that boat launch right there at 17th, as well as the pedestrian walk under and not having to have our life under the bridge to get through, but now would have the under the trestle closer to the bayou inlet. Mm-hmm. There you would have a place to walk under and connect to that boardwalk that's on the north side. So all of those things will finally take place. We've been mired in land, just like you said, land use and who owns what, who's going to maintain what. And it's only been for the south side, Andrew. North side, that is all city road at that point on the north side. It's the south side getting close to the 3 mile bridge where FDOT, which I still don't believe this stat that I'm going to tell you. I need to confirm it for myself, but I believe that this is the first infrared system in the state of Florida.
Oh, nice.
It's just hard to believe that there isn't one other bridge in this big state. But that has been a lot of the holdup, and understandably, FDOT saying, hey, you know, we want you to maintain this system. It's yours, so that means it's got to be on your property, not ours. So there was lots of red tape, so to speak, to get through over this past year or so just to get the south side worked out.
So tell people, I've actually posted it on Facebook because it's in the backup to the city council meeting agenda for next week. But so people can see it on either my Facebook page or on a News Radio Facebook page. You can see the pictures for yourself. But how will this actually work? Like if you're driving a box truck and you're coming off of, let's say, 3 mile bridge or an RV, and you make the mistake of going to the roundabout and hooking a right, and now you're headed towards Griffey Bridge, what are you going to see, what's going to happen, and how will we prevent you from running your box truck into that bridge at your expense because the bridge doesn't care?
Right. Now you will have a much, much stronger warning light show coming towards you with enough time to stop. That's the other key piece. And remember, we've talked about so many iterations of this over the years and before my time here about we always talked about the chimes, right? Like maybe have something that signals it. The problem with the chimes is twofold. If you do it too late, you're going to hear some chimes, and about a half second later, you're going to hit the bridge.
Yeah.
If you do it too early, you have this little pesky boat launch over here, and you know what's going to hit a lot of those chimes? Boats. So that was really the quagmire of how do you handle the south side of somebody going northbound on 17th, where you're not clanging everybody's boat who's just innocently going to the boat launch, but also allow enough warning time for someone to actually stop. So that's where we landed on this more modernized solution that you will drive, and this sensor will know if you're too tall, and you will be not by volume, but by lights flashing and warning signs in front of you will be yelled at to please stop and to pull over. So more than just a sign that says low bridge that we've had historically. So again, I can't promise that it's going to stop every single person, but this will be the best offensive yet to stop the undefeated bridge.
So you're going to have sensors just north of the roundabout, and then there's going to be a big basically display board sign on the right before you get to the turnoff to the Visit Pensacola, and on the left parallel to that. And that's going to warn you, overhead vehicle detected, stop, don't be stupid, various forms of this. And then another sign farther after that that says overheight vehicle turn right, and giving them clear instructions that they can turn right and go into the boat launch area, turn back around and drive through to the Visit Pensacola turnoff and come back south and go towards the roundabout. I assume on the north it's not as easy to figure out the turnaround problem, but I assume it's something comparable on the north side as well.
Exactly. And again, we've spent less time really focused on it because that's been city property. So
yeah.
Putting the equipment in itself hasn't been as laborious. But yes, it'll be something similar, probably, you know, where the exact signs will be located and distance might be a little bit different. But again, the hope being that we couldn't say it any louder and remember, there's a real cost every time this happens,
yeah.
Not just to the rail company that's got to go inspect the bridge, but you know, that's our police officers. You're the police officers you're paying for to go out there and deal with that and block traffic and stop people from getting to work on time or school on time. And so, I mean, you add up that times however many times we've been through this. There's some real value to being able to try to, hopefully, God willing, solve this once and for all. Or at least 99% of the time.
All right, Mayor, last thing. And just because, I mean, I know this is still a next week, and then it's this summer, and then, okay, but by the end of this year, we should have a fully functioning warning system in place on the south side and the north side of the 17th Avenue Graffiti Bridge trestle. Finally, at long last, here's my prediction.
Okay.
When we haven't had a strike in 6 months to a year, people are going to be sad that you took away their sport.
Yeah. I understand. I understand the collateral damage that is not allowing people to hit our bridge anymore, and
yeah.
You know, and the potential political negatives that I'll be taking on because I won't allow people the social media entertainment. But
yeah.
I think it's I've weighed my options, and I still believe that not having people live through the thousands of dollars of damage each time it happens, plus all of the bandwidth that. We feel like it's the right thing to do, but I do apologize in advance if you see a decrease in strikes for our personal entertainment.
It is a weird little part of our identity that this happens and we get to joke about it and see it and share it, and you know that's going to be a loss, even though nobody wants to admit
Andrew,
it.
Hold on, and don't sell the human race short now. Don't assume that they're going to all go away.
You're right. I am. We are talking about a population of people that still thinks that we can't navigate around about what makes you think this will 100% solve the problem. So fair enough.
Correct.
No, that's a fair. You know, people don't trust a lot of things, and maybe they won't trust the warnings and the lights and the blinkers and that's true. Couple of other things going on. Obviously, you have talked and you've talked before. This is not new, but you were talking again yesterday about the $9 million loss of recurring money. That's every year money if the current proposal of the property tax referendum does go through. I just wanted to do a 15-second for people's comparison.
Yeah.
That's a quarter of your general revenue budget. And just for comparison, the parks budget is how much?
About $10 million.
Okay.
The bottom line is, when you don't have numbers and when our leadership isn't giving any viable alternative solution other than the free money solution, right? Everybody agrees to free money, but what consequences come with free money?
Right.
Well, it's been crickets, right? I mean, has anybody around the state heard even if we argue that it shouldn't be a replacement of $9 million, should it be 7? Should it be 6?
Right.
There's been nothing proposed on that front. So, but I do get a good chuckle out of the, well, cut 27% of your general fund budget and be like, oh, you know, just move a couple pennies around. That is not the case. I mean, there's going to be conversation about parks, about sidewalks, about what services that the city can even afford to provide. So if we were talking about 3%, that logic might hold, that we'd say, hey, we got to tighten up our belt and go to the next thing and make some difficult decisions. 27% is beyond, you know, wishy-washy decisions about priorities.
Right.
We're talking about impacting the fundamental services that you expect. And so, you know, if you say, I don't care, Mayor, then just imagine if we don't have a parks and rec budget, you know, that the park that you go to in the city of Pensacola, how important is that to you? And maybe it's not.
Well, that's why I wanted to give people, I just wanted to, because I know it's easy to say the, you know, these are the big things, but I wanted to really give them a numbers view of this. If we're losing $9 million, the entire Parks Department is $10 million, what's the road repair budget in Pensacola roughly? And I know you may not have this top of mind, but if you happen to know.
Yeah, I don't have it top of mind, but I can tell you that we spend, what I do have is, that road repaving program is about $1 million a year right now.
Okay.
Now, if I went and checked my emails, I don't get a lot of emails saying every road is paved perfectly, right?
Right.
I think there's lots of ones that I typically get the opposite. So again, and I say this at town halls, and I've been saying this for months, if you say, I don't want to pay that anymore, that is certainly your right, your liberty as a voter to say that. But when you don't have state income tax and you don't have any other significant revenue stream, then that means you're voting for a loss of services. And
right.
You are not voting for free money. You're voting for a loss of services. And there is no scenario that a 27% cut would survive significant loss of service.
And like, for example, for people to wrap their brain around it, like in the county, the entire road resurfacing budget, I believe, is around $6 or $7 million. In the city, of course, losing $9 million, yeah, it's much less, as you said, about $1 million a year. PPD budget is running about how much? Now, I know PPD is supposed to not be able to be cut. Good luck making that math all work out.
Which is a whole nother, in essence, Andrew, that's an unfunded mandate on top of
it. Of course.
I mean, what you're saying is, I mean, remember, we have union negotiations starting back again with fire. Well, how is that going to go when we're having an unfunded mandate that says you're not allowed to touch another dollar? Here's what I use. $48 million is police and fire. $48 million. Our entire non-CRA general fund property tax contribution is 25. So explain how we're going to continue to fund at 48 when we lose our largest revenue stream at 25. I mean, it's just not. So I don't even know how that would be possible. So I know it's easy politically to go and say, well, we're going to cut your property tax. Oh, and by the way, don't worry, because we'll look bad by saying that we're going to cut public safety. So we're just going to flippantly throw in there that we're going to not cut public safety. But there's, I don't know how that's a financial reality for 100 plus cities in the state of Florida.
I couldn't agree more. That's exactly the point. And the very flippant, unserious answers by the representative running the bill in debate were just, it's so so disappointing. You know, you'll just work it out. You'll contract with the sheriff. You'll figure out how to cut the money. You know, it's profoundly unserious. All right, by the way, congratulations on the CDBG announcement with the money there.
Thank you.
Congratulations on, the ongoing possibility, at least we hope, for the soccer field. I thought that was an interesting conversation. We just don't have time to talk about it today. I knew people would be most interested in Graffiti Bridge because this has been a so many right. years thing that we've been trying to solve. We always like to end with a lightning round, quick questions for you. First question for you. You buy unopened mayonnaise. You know, you bought it from the store. You brought it home. Does the unopened jar of mayonnaise go in the cupboard or in the refrigerator?
Well, option C, I don't eat mayonnaise.
Okay.
So neither one.
Okay. All right. All right. I see you. Healthy man. It's fine. Do you remember a game that stressed you out as a kid? A game that, you know, made you have to grow up because you learned to deal with stress? Like particularly a toy, if there is one.
I was thinking you were, I was like, probably tackle football out in the, in the middle of the front yard or backyard.
Yeah, pain,
you know,
for sure.
Waiting for a broken leg.
All right, fair enough. Dr. Seuss's birthday was yesterday. Does Mayor Reeves have a favorite Dr. Seuss book? Oh, sorry, Monday.
I always, I would probably go Green Eggs and Ham. I mean, you got to stick with the classics.
That's a good one. That's a good answer.
You know, and that's the extent of my reading level typically. So, it's still on my shelf today.
Corollary, did you ever read Your Lady, a Dr. Seuss book, as a date idea?
No, I haven't. But did that work?
Oh, I mean, it got me a 28-year marriage. Yeah, we're good. So,
I should have taken your advice earlier. As usual.
Mayor D.C. Reeves, always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week. Look forward to the city council meeting next week as well. We'll see you then. Thank you so much. Safe travels.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Absolutely. So, obviously, the big news out of that interview, it was on the backup page for the city council meeting next week, but the Graffiti Bridge warning system, finally. We have something. Well, we don't have it yet. I mean, they have to approve it next week, the MOU with the MOA with the FDOT, and then we have to build the thing. But, you know, we're going to have it this year. It's kind of funny on our Facebook page when I posted this and a lot of people commenting, like 100 comments. And The comments range. You know, why didn't they try this? Why don't they do this? How can we spend this money? People are still stupid. You know, all the... Okay, I mean, you know, it's... This has been a thing for, obviously, as long as I've lived here, just 13 years. I really do think that if this works, and, you know, God alone maybe knows that it will, but if this works, I really do think that there is going to be the sense that, you know, we lost a thing that was kind of a part of our identity as a city, oddly. It's, you know, rationally, nobody can really justify leaving it the way that it is without fixing it, but there is... There's something of the Pensacola experience and the collective following of every time there's a strike on the bridge that just won't be true anymore if this manages to work as it's supposed to do. So we'll see. 437-1620, your thoughts on either the plan or solving the problem itself. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are very, very good at this. You know, when the market was really easy, like 4 years ago, they were selling over 200 homes a year. And then the market got harder, you know, interest rates changed and people's willingness to sell and interest in hanging on to properties changed and, you know, the inability to refinance at the same rate, you know, all of the things that changed, okay? So they went from selling over 200 to selling 175, then the next year is 165, that was 2 years ago. And, you know, I mean, still a lot, I mean, still three a week. Well, last year, back up to 209. So the number one, you know, residential real estate sales team in the area, four homes a week, week after week after week. That's a lot of experience. That's a lot of knowing what people like, what they don't like, what they're interested in, what they're willing to pay, what they're not willing to pay, all of that kind of stuff. So as a result, you know, they're selling homes where other realtors haven't succeeded. You know, that's why they're up 30%, is because they're able to figure all of these things out and price it right, stage it right, do all the things that end up in the end result of closing, which a lot of, again, you know, people come to Christine all the time with second realtor, fourth realtor, fifth realtor. It's not great, but it is true that she gets it sold for them. And many times quickly, even sometimes, I know sometimes at even a higher price, you think, how can that be? Well, I don't know, but she knows, and that's why she gets the results she gets. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
In the time it takes to watch one episode of your favorite show, you could be approved for your auto loan. While your dinner's in the oven, you could be comparing rates. By the time your morning coffee is brewed, those keys to your new car could practically be in your hand. PenAir Credit Union doesn't just process auto loans. We beam you straight into the driver's seat. Fast approvals, low rates, and easy financing. Apply now at penair.org/autoloans. Federally insured by NCUA.
Greater Pensacola's leaders are in the tallest buildings and smallest shops. And they come together here to drive growth and innovation. To bridge industries, to share fresh ideas, and to understand how they can play a part in Greater Pensacola's success. The Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. We believe local businesses are the cornerstone of a great community.
Hurricane season begins June 1st, but preparation starts now. Florida's severe weather season is underway, and the same steps that help you prepare for hurricanes, making a plan, gathering supplies, and staying informed, also help protect you during severe weather today. For simple step-by-step guidance, visit floridamakeaplan.com. One plan can help you prepare for many storms. Brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the University of Florida, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Do you have questions regarding your plants and landscaping? If so, the Garden Line is for you. I am Mike Wiggins, and every Tuesday morning at 9, we are here for you on News Radio 92.3 to answer your questions. Seasonal changes call for different activities in your lawn and garden, so tune in and text or call with your questions on the Garden Line on Tuesdays at 9 and an encore each Saturday at the same time.
The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel, Tuesdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
So, what did I miss today?
Good question.
I'm Andrew McKay.
Chris Bryan.
Austin Price.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Well, there you have it.
Let me clarify. I love my wife. I want her to be happy. I want good things for her. But there are times...
Interesting note that Senator Don Gates put out. I got it yesterday. I think it was yesterday he put it out. Headline in the email, midweek eight of session, he means, can we finish by next Friday? And basically the tone of the email is, you know, what the heck? We can't get anything done. We're pushing up against the end of session. We don't have the budget stuff figured out, which is true. The Senate and the House, of course, have to get together. That's the only thing that they have to do at the legislature. They have to pass a balanced budget. You know, the House has passed some things. The Senate's passed some things. There are very few things that have passed both chambers. Anything that doesn't pass both chambers before they adjourn, sine die, next Friday basically dies and they have to start all over. And, you know, so a lot of these conversations about interesting bills that have moved in one chamber or the other, like, for example, the Guardian Act in the House that Michelle Salzman has pushed, not done anything in the Senate, the Alex Andrade's bill to specifically prohibit what James Othmeyer did with the, you know, the funding, that hasn't gone anywhere in the Senate. And on the other side, same thing. You know, the Senate's worked on the AI bill and the House hasn't done anything with it. And we'll see, property taxes, like all of this stuff, it's just very little productivity.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
A new threat from Iran. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. After the U.S. sank a warship in international waters with a torpedo, Iran's foreign minister posted on social media today the U.S. will come to bitterly regret the precedent set, calling it an atrocity at sea.
Abbas Araghchi says the vessel was a guest of the Indian Navy and was attacked without warning. Meanwhile, a senior Iranian cleric has appeared on state TV to call for the shedding of blood from Israelis and President Trump. Still no official word on who will be selected as the Islamic Republic's new supreme leader.
That's Fox's Jonathan Savage. Now, Iran did launch more missiles into Israel this morning that were shot down. There are reports of explosions in Qatar and Bahrain. As the U.S. and Israel keep up the attacks, Fox's Trey Yingston, Tel Aviv.
A senior Israeli official telling Fox News today over the phone that the regime is now having trouble communicating and coordinating as Israeli and American strikes go after the IRGC leadership structure and the entire mechanism of repression. It's referred to the organization that cracked down on protesters earlier this year.
Now, Democrats keep trying to limit President Trump in Iran.
And their blind hatred of the president, just being opposed to anything that he wants to do.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune, as Republicans blocked a war powers resolution the House will vote on today. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
Regime change wars have never worked out for the American people. And of course, thousands of lives.
Oil prices are rising more. Another 6 cent increase also at the gas pump. AAA's national average for regular $3.25 per gallon this morning, up 26 cents in 3 days. Well, in a new Fox News poll,
37% rating the U.S. economy as poor, while 7% describe it as excellent and 23% as good. More than half of those polled, 57%, rating their personal finances as only fair or poor.
That's Fox's Kristen Goodwin, and the approval rating for President Trump only at 43% in that poll. America's listening to Fox News.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
One in four tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
One in four was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Did you know GoodRx can help you save on medication, manage prescriptions, and get trusted health information? If you're one of the millions living with a heart condition, check GoodRx for an easier, more affordable way to manage your health. GoodRx offers common heart medications for under $30. Just search for your prescription, find the best price, then show your pharmacist the GoodRx coupon. And it works whether you have insurance or not. To start saving and better manage your heart health, download the free app or visit GoodRx.com today. GoodRx is not insurance but can be used instead of insurance, including Medicare and other federal and state-funded programs.
It's not unusual for protesters to interrupt congressional hearings, but this is different.
A man in a Marine uniform started shouting during the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing on the readiness of the joint force.
Nobody wants to fight.
That man, later identified as Brian McGinnis of North Carolina, as he kept yelling, Committee Chair Dan Sullivan warned,
Capitol Police will escort any protesters out of the hearing room.
They tried to do just that, but McGinnis fought back. That's when Republican Senator Tim Sheehy of Montana jumped in, helping the cops get McGinnis out of the room. During the melee, McGinnis caught his hand in a door, breaking it. He's now facing several charges, including assaulting a police officer. Jill Nato, Fox News.
On Wall Street, stock futures are down modestly the day after rebound gains. Both the Dow and the Nasdaq rose more than 200 points. A legend of college football has died. A coach, Lou Holtz, who President Trump honored in 2020 with the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
I will say this about Lou. Everybody loves him. Everybody respects him. He's tough as hell. And yet they all respect Lou. They just, it's amazing. They love him and they respect him.
Lou Holtz, who restored greatness at Notre Dame and led the Irish to the national title in 1988, has died at 89 years old. Holtz spent 33 years as a head coach at the college level, including stops at North Carolina State, Arkansas, Minnesota, and South Carolina. But he was most known for his time in South Bend, where he had 100 wins over 11 seasons as head coach of the Irish. Holtz instituted several traditions at Notre Dame. The Play Like a Champion sign that Fighting Irish players honor on their way out to the field was first displayed during the Holtz era. I'm Joe Morgan, Fox News.
The World Baseball Classic has begun. Korea playing Czechia now after Australia shut out Chinese Taipei in the opener late last night. I'm Dave Anthony. This is Fox News.
Good morning. It's 6:05 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 65 degrees, nice and warm this morning, cloudy skies. We do have our full forecast. Brooke Richardson's got that for us in just a few minutes. But first, let's get a check on our traffic on the fives. PJ's in for John Pickens this morning.
Traffic's brought to you by Princeton Grove Apartments. Princeton Grove Apartments is a new affordable housing community in Crestview. Introductory rates and no application fee. Resort-style living awaits. Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview. I-10 and 110 are both looking good at this hour. If you're on US 98 east and westbound through Navarre, that is flowing smooth. The front gate of NES Pensacola backed up to Sunset. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, PJ. Well, we are learning a little bit more about this Pensacola area man indicted for threatening President Trump. Marcus Hamlet is reportedly a retired U.S. Air Force technical sergeant who served more than two decades in the military. Reports show he'd been demoted after a 2024 court-martial after pleading guilty to a drunk driving charge and assaulting a police officer. Court documents reveal that Hamlet actually climbed a fence at one point at the Escambia Sheriff's Office and then was Baker-acted, eventually met with Secret Service agents. Hamlet, who lives out of his vehicle, told agents he'd been trying to get arrested for a year. A women's basketball game at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Pensacola turned violent yesterday morning. A brawl broke out between Coastal Carolina and South Alabama players with about 5 minutes left in the game. Eight players were ejected. A referee was knocked to the floor and hit her head and required medical attention. South Alabama did win the game 80-70 despite losing seven players to ejections. The Sun Belt Conference has suspended three South Alabama players for one game and Coastal Carolina's number 13 for the remainder of the season. South Alabama plays Texas State at the Bay Center at 11:30. This morning. Seven suspected serial shoplifters are behind bars. Investigators say they stole nearly $200,000 in cosmetics from stores across the state. Authorities say the group, dubbed the Beauty Bag Bandits, targeted retailers in a dozen counties as part of an organized theft ring. Statewide prosecutor Christopher Olwin says the stolen merchandise was resold for quick cash.
Law enforcement officers were able to uncover the fencing operation, the location where these stolen goods were going, and they recovered over $120,000 worth of stolen goods in that fencing location and over $50,000 in illegitimate cash.
And Attorney General James Uthmeyer said the organized retail theft task force has focused on criminal groups attempting